Before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to let you know about a powerful free resource for Lent. It's a devotional excerpt from Lent and Easter for Everyone by N.T. Wright, featuring daily scripture reflections for a week to guide you from the wilderness to the wonder of Easter. Whether you observe Lent every year or you're just exploring it for the first time, this short devotional will help you slow down and grow in wisdom this season. Download your free copy today at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now on to the show.
Hi, it's Gavin.
I'm Phil.
I don't know about you, but it can sometimes feel like we're living in a bad news world. Wars, scandals, crisis after crisis.
But if you're ready to change the soundtrack and hear what God is really doing, we have a brand new podcast just for you.
We're traveling the UK, seeing people come to faith, churches grow, and new life break out.
With real stories, fresh research, and inspiring leaders, we are ready to give you a front row seat to God on the move.
Good News People is a new podcast from Premier and the Evangelical Alliance.
So listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are good news people in a bad news world.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources, and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I am very excited to be joined today by Dr. Crystal Hurd, an educator, poet, and researcher from Virginia. She's contributed a chapter on Flora Lewis, C.S. Lewis's mum, in the book Women and C.S. Lewis. And she's written her own book, The Leadership of C.S. Lewis, 10 Traits to Encourage Change and Growth. We're going to be talking about Crystal's work on various aspects of C.S. Lewis's life, as well as sharing a paper that was presented on her behalf at the 2024 Undiscovered C.S. Lewis Conference, which was held at George Fox University. The title of Crystal's paper there was How Paternal Literary Habits Influenced C.S. Lewis. Crystal, you describe leadership as influence. I mean, clearly he influenced people back then, like those students, like the people who read his writing, listened to his talks. Do you think Lewis still has influence today?
Absolutely. I think one of the hallmarks of Lewis is that he read the old books and he knew what timeless wisdom was, and he was able to, again, translate that into modern situations like science fiction, children's lit. He was able to do that and keep the skeletal structure of the old wisdom, and just dress it in new clothes. And he was just so well. Like I said, I mean, like Till We Have Faces almost reads, I mean, because it is based on Greek mythology, it reads like a Greek tale. But how many of us know and understand the wisdom of those stories? So many of us can see. I mean, right now, I know in the publishing world, Greek retellings are all the rage right now. uncovering new people from very old stories and sort of, introducing them to a modern audience. And I think that's what Lewis did in his own way. And so I still think, yeah, absolutely. I've seen, and I talk about this in the book too, but I've seen people say, is he still relevant? Because my grandpa liked him, so maybe he's not relevant anymore. But I feel like the old wisdom, the big T truth, never, I mean, it's always relevant. It never falls out of style, because we are just the same creatures we have always been, just in different times and different modes. But that wisdom, I think, never ceases to be relevant to us.
So you don't think there won't ever be like a shelf life on his relevance? You think that's going to carry on for another 60 odd years, do you think, Crystal?
I think so. And it's funny because, you know, his essay Rehabilitations talks about that very thing. And maybe in another 50 years or 100 years, somebody will say, hey, I reimagined Narnia for kids who grew up on screens. Hey, I've reimagined the Ransom trilogy, but now in a world where, you know, going to Mars isn't a big deal. Whatever, you know, I don't know. I'm no prophet, but, you know, it's interesting. I think the great stories are always being transformed and retold. It's just like the hero's journey, right? The Joseph Campbell thing. That hero's journey will always be relevant and adored by humans, you know? Dorothy Sayers talks about the greatest drama ever told, right? And she says, if you make that story the story of Jesus, if you make it boring, that's on you. That's not the story's fault. You know, you got to love her for her honesty. But I think she's right. I think there's just something essential. And when that's there, it will always be relevant to humans, no matter what.
Crystal, you turned your doctoral research on transformational leadership and Lewis into the book, The Leadership of C.S. Lewis, 10 Traits to Encourage Change and Growth. What are those 10 traits that you identified?
So those traits are sort of based on some research of sort of secular models, but I broke them into chapters. So we had humility, morals, vision, courage, intellect, compassion, duty, resilience, inspiration, and creativity. So those were I amassed those from studying multiple different sort of secular models, but I saw sort of the Venn diagram sort of overlap again, because people, we lead people regardless of yeah, you know, these traits work in various settings, including spiritual settings. So I sort of saw all these and I said, these are, you know, these really seem to reflect Lewis the most. And then as I started diving into his letters and his essays and all that stuff, it jumped out at me just like how much he satisfied those requirements.
And are there any of those characteristics that you feel are more important than others, or do they all sort of work in tandem with each other?
They do, but I feel like, and I made it chapter one for intentionally, but I feel like humility is the most important one. He had a chapter on humility in Mere Christianity. He talks very specifically about that and about how pride is the worst sin. He mentions that several places. You know, a lot of people, you know, want to say, you know, lust is the worst sin, but he actually argues there and other places that pride is the worst because it grows unchecked. It likes to hide itself as other things, like confidence or whatever. And so arrogance can kind of grow unchecked. It's a sneaky sin. So it sort of pops up on us. So I think being a leader, you have to constantly, and he says this, right, that he was giving a sermon once and all these people were coming up and saying, oh, good job, Lewis. Yeah. And he said, I had to go upstairs and hit my knees and pray for the pride that was growing to leave me. I had to pray that off of me because I didn't want, he knew it was, you know, it was growing because all these people said, good job, Lewis. Yeah. And he was very self-aware of that. So I think that, leaders are servants. We look at Jesus's leadership, even in his ministry, even though it was, you know, 3 years, he was constantly serving people, constantly. And he was concerned about the lowest, the smallest, the most disenfranchised. That is the type of leader that has the most impact. And I think Lewis knew that too.
It must have been really hard for Lewis to remain humble because he had this worldwide fame. I mean, even in America in his lifetime, there were people writing to him and talking about how wonderful he was. How did he retain that humility, Crystal?
Well, I think he prayed and read a lot. He stayed grounded in the word, and he, you know, prayed a lot. You know, I think he would. Yeah, I can't. I mean, this is just in my mind. I obviously didn't go to church with him more until years after he passed. But, you know, I'm sure he talks about in one of the essays how he was at church once and he saw this working guy with like mud on his boots. And he says to himself, you know, my first like instinct is to be like, wow, he came into church dirty. And then he thinks to himself, I'm not even like worthy of wiping his boots off. Mm. You know, it's the C.S. Lewis guy, right? You know, I think at every turn, he reminded himself that he's just this ordinary guy who through Christ did extraordinary things, but always pointed the credit back to where it belonged. Mm-hmm. Never, ever gave himself any credit, you know? So, and I think that's what it was. I think it always came back to God, and the way he grounded himself in the word. Mm-hmm. And he prayed a lot, brought him back to the center of everything, which was not him.
Yeah.
It was, you know, something greater.
Crystal, the second characteristic that you mentioned is moral. So what does moral leadership look like in Lewis's mind?
I think just having a moral compass. When I was writing that chapter, it's interesting because I've heard some people say morals are for spiritual people and ethics are for non-spiritual people, but to me they're kind of the same thing, and they act the same way in a lot of ways. It's sort of just about caring for others, not having an ulterior motive or anything like that when you're doing and making the decisions you make. And it is a heavy burden to be a leader. We talked about that in leadership studies, you know, the course. There's the ivory tower metaphor, and the, you know, the heavy is the head that wears the crown. It's a lot to be a leader. I think a lot of people want to look at the perks, but if you're really doing the hard work and rolling up your sleeves and doing it, it's heartbreaking work at times. Mm. Really. It's a lot. So some people have decided I'm not going to focus on the heartbreaking stuff, but then what happens? You can lose your compassion. You can lose your empathy, and you don't want that. Because God tells us everybody's important, mm. right? So in a moral and ethics situation, if you say, this is my moral compass, you follow that moral compass through all your decisions that you make. And in the conversations you have and the transactions you have with people, that moral compass is at the heart of everything you say and do. Mm.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
If you've ever wrestled with questions like who goes to hell or should Christians believe in evolution, you're not alone. That's why this month, when you support Premier Insight, we'll send you a digital booklet of N.T. Wright's most thought-provoking Q&A columns as our thank you for your gift. Your support keeps content like this podcast going and helps more people grow in wisdom through biblical truth. Give today and get your copy at premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis.
Hi, it's Gavin.
I'm Phil.
I don't know about you, but it can sometimes feel like we're living in a bad news world. Wars, scandals, crisis after crisis.
But if you're ready to change the soundtrack and hear what God is really doing, we have a brand new podcast just for you.
We're traveling the UK, seeing people come to faith, churches grow, and new life break out.
With real stories, fresh research, and inspiring leaders, we are ready to give you a front row seat to God on the move.
Good News People is a new podcast from Premier and the Evangelical Alliance.
So listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Good News People in a bad news world.
the C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation. And Crystal, why is vision an important aspect of leadership? And how do you think, what did that look like for Lewis in Lewis's life and his work?
Lewis is a really unique individual because he literally lived through two world wars. that there's a reason they call that generation the greatest generation. Even though he was, my grandfather was a World War II vet, and they had to endure rationing. And my grandfather actually wrote my grandmother, and she would talk about how she'd get these letters and they would be almost completely blacked out because the information couldn't be shared internationally about where they were and what they were doing. So it's interesting. You kind of had to live in the unknown, in the uncertainty of everything, and be comfortable there because you were there all the time. Lewis talks a lot about getting the rationing packages from some of his American correspondents and being very grateful for those. And you're living in a time where there's so much uncertainty and so much transition. So being able to remain optimistic and faithful really in those times was a difficulty. So I think with a vision, here's what I think the world will be better if we all do this. Let's work towards this. Let's work towards all being better and not just having like a quote unquote Christian nation, but learning that when we love each other and we love God and we love one another, the world opens up. And so I think his vision was rooted in Christian tradition, but it really came down to the very basic commandments that God gave us. And so that vision was to have a better world, to hopefully have less people suffering and less people stuck in the unknown and less people hurting. And there was a lot of that during that time.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine, most of my students, if they lose their phone charger, they're about to, have a heart attack, can you imagine like your brother going off to war and not hearing for months where they are? You can't just go out and buy things at the store. You're rationed. You're, understanding that sort of mindset.
Yeah.
And having to be okay with it, but knowing, yes, there are things that we can do for one another that makes things better.
Yeah.
It starts with us.
And one of the character traits that also plays into a lot of what you're saying about what Lewis experienced is courage, isn't it? Where else did he talk about courage?
Oh, yeah. Aslan says it, right? I have a sign back here. It says Aslan is on the move. courage, dear heart. I'm 45 and I still remind myself of what Aslan says in the moments where I feel like, what's going to happen? What are we going to do? And then I remind myself, like, humanity has survived some amazingly terrible, really, things in life. And we're still here. We're still here with God's help. We've endured it. And so, and Lewis himself, remember, was a World War I vet. It was a World War II. Was on the infant, it was just sort of like running the town stuff in World War II. And I've talked some about the fact that he was asked to write some propaganda and turned it down. Thought it was sort of a waste of his gift to spend it like that. In one of his last interviews, right, he was with the Billy Graham Foundation or something, like he was talking about, if you sell the message short, it's almost like prostitution, he says, because that's not the full message. So it's so interesting to me, like, how even in his own personal life, he had those morals and that core and ethics. And he was like, I'm not going to use this gift to do that. But I think he helped so many people through the World War II period. So many people. And that's why he was answering letters 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
They just kept piling up, you know. But, you know, and he felt a duty, which is another one of my chapters. He felt a duty to answer these people because they had spent their time writing to him. And he said, why, I need to, you know, the least I can do is spend some time to respond.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about duty. Why was duty so important to Lewis? And how does this come across in his work?
I think it's doing the work and not just delegating others to do the work, which you have to do sometimes in leadership. If someone's better at it than you, let them have it, right? And and all of you together benefit from that. But I mean, yeah, Lewis, I feel like he got this from his father. His father was a police court solicitor who honestly, you know, had to represent people who could not afford representation, who were facing prejudice from the courts and from policemen and all these other, even wrote a story called The Story of the Half-Sovereign, which has a protagonist who presents a coin to pay for Christmas dinner, and then he is accused of it being fake, goes to jail, spends months in jail, and then it turns out that the coin was just oxidized by something in his pocket, and it was a real coin the whole time. And I think that's Albert's way of saying so many times the poor and the downtrodden are already facing an insurmountable obstacle of being poor and living in a society that seems to work against you. And then even the systems that were put in place to try to make it even are working against you. So we talk a lot about Albert working so much, and that was the reason why he did. He was one of the best, hands down, one of the best lawyers in town. And people came to him for help, and he didn't want to turn them away. So he ended up working a lot because he was good at his job, and he felt it was his Christian duty to represent these people who otherwise probably wouldn't have had a good chance to win or to defend themselves. So I think he saw his father do that, and he felt that that was part of, you know, it's about giving of yourself too, right? Christianity is about sort of giving of yourself and staying loyal and true to people and doing what you say you're going to do. And so that duty, even when it's inconvenient or you're tired, and you know, as a mother, right? Like it never ends, right? You know, it never ends. But what a blessing to get to help others through lighting your own candle. You can help light up the whole place. And I think that was one of the most ignored or dismissed traits, but one of the most important traits to have.
Well, and one area where he clearly influences others and shares his gift is through his intellect. I mean, how did his intellect make him an effective leader?
The translation part we were mentioning earlier, you need to have a strong intellect to be able to effectively translate those truths. And I think he did it. And he did it in such an interesting way, too. You know, Jesus used parables, used story, right? Because our brains love story so much. I've talked elsewhere about the fact that as a teacher, as an educator, story can teach usually better than a lecture can. And I think that like Lewis knew that and was able to craft those stories and use his creativity and his intellect sort of married together to do that. But, you know, he was incredibly smart. Going through the family papers and studying them, as I have the last 10 years, we actually have letters from Kirkpatrick with William T. Kirkpatrick, the great knock, right? His mentor during his teenage years. We have letters from him to Albert where he says, this boy is exceptional. He's exceptional. He can translate Greek. I've never seen a kid this bright be able to translate Homer how he does. He's terrible at math. Terrible, which is crazy because his mother was brilliant at math, and he's terrible at it. Good luck to him on the math part. But the languages, the philosophy, he is brilliant. He is very brilliant for a boy his age. And here's a man who spent his life as a headmaster, mm-hmm. right? Had Albert as a student, and then later Warney as a student, personally, you know. And he just said, he says of Albert in a letter very early on, there's a spark of the divine fire in you. And I think Lewis inherited that. Mm. And he was able to marry all these things. And he talks about, and this goes back to pride too, he didn't want to be a prig, right? He didn't want to be a snob. And he almost did, right? I mean, if you read volume one of the letters, he's a real snob before his conversion. Mm. He is, you know, he's kind of a snob, you know? And I think maybe knowing that later years, you know, and realizing what God has done for him and how he's transformed him, made him that. But yeah, he was so smart, just off the chart in so many ways, different. But he did have the opportunities too, which I think is great. You know, he was able, his father afforded him opportunities to go study. So he was able to use that intellect to his advantage. Mm. And then later use it for the kingdom.
Yeah. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the program. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos, and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources, and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Hi, it's Gavin.
And Phil.
I don't know about you, but it can sometimes feel like we're living in a bad news world. Wars, scandals, crisis after crisis.
But if you're ready to change the soundtrack and hear what God is really doing, we have a brand new podcast just for you.
We're traveling the UK, seeing people come to faith, churches grow, and new life break out.
With real stories, fresh research, and inspiring leaders, we are ready to give you a front row seat to God on the move.
Good News People is a new podcast from Premier and the Evangelical Alliance.
So listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Good News People in a bad news world.